Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is March the 14th. We are in Sefer Nehemiah in Perek Vav, Chapter 6. This class is dedicated as a chus, a merit for Refuah Shleima, speed of recovery for Abby Lewis, Avigal Yehudis Bas Shachna, who is having surgery tomorrow. And it was when those no good for nothings, Sanvalat and Tovia, heard, and not only them, but now we'll list a few more. Ulegeshem Ha'arvi, that's another person. Uliyeser Oyvenu, and our other enemies. Kivonisi es Hachoma, that I built the wall. Falonosar Ba Paretz, and there were no more any breaches left. Gam Ad Ha'esahi. Also, until that time, the lasos lo ha'emadati basharim. I didn't yet put up doors on the gates. The gates were still open. And this is a significant fact, as we'll see as we move along in this chapter, that the fact that there were no doors on the gates were still open. So the walls were up, very strong, powerful walls, but the gates were not yet blocked. Vayishlach Sanvalat v'Geshem Elai Lemar. Sanvalat and Geshem, those two people, sent to me saying. Now they changed tactics. Until now they've been trying to undermine the building of the wall of Yerushalayim through intimidation, through attacking, through threatening. Now they changed tactics. Lecha v'nivad ha'yachdav. Let's meet together. Bakfirim. In Kfirim, Bevikas Ono, in the Valley of Ono. Vahim Achoshim Lasos Lira. But Nehemiah says, they were thinking to do evil to me, to do bad to me. So I didn't want to meet with them. I know they were trying to do bad to me, and I didn't want to meet with them. Therefore, Vayashlacha Lahem Malachim Lehmar, I sent to them messengers saying, Malacha Gedola Niosa, I'm involved in a lot of work. And I'm not able to go down. I'm busy. I have a lot of work to do over here. Lama sishbas hamelacha kasher arpeha. Why should the work be stopped when I weaken it? Fiaranti alechem, and I go down to you. If I go away from the work, it's gonna deter the work, and I don't want that to happen. Vayishtachu elai kadavar hazeh arba peamim. They sent me the same thing four times. Four times they sent me messages. Messages to come to meet them. And I responded all four times the same way. I'm sorry, I'm very busy. I cannot accept invitations at this time. Sanvalat sent to me a fifth time his lad. And he had an open letter in his hand. And it said in that letter, Bagoyim nishma, it has been heard amongst the nations, Ve'gashmu Omer, and my friend Geshem also says, Atov v'ha'yehudim choshvim limrod. You and the Jews, you want to rebel. Al kinat avona ha'chomot. That's why you're building the wall. Ve'ata hovelohem lemelech. And you Nehemiah, are going to be for them king. Kadvoi mo'ele, like these things. That's what it says in the letter, like these things. So they were accusing Nehemiah of establishing a rebellion against the Persian king, and that Nehemiah himself will be the king of the Jewish people. Now we know that's not such a crazy accusation, because Nehemiah is a direct descendant of David HaMelech, and if there would have been Jewish royalty, Jewish monarchy at this time, Nehemiah certainly would have been the king. V'gam nevi'im emarata, you also established prophets, likro alech of Yerushalayim, to call upon you in Yerushalayim, they were saying, Melech b'Yehuda. The king of Yehuda. The king in Yehuda. So Sanvalat is accusing Nehemiah of having gotten some prophets to announce on the streets of Yerushalayim that Nehemiah is king. And now will be heard to the king, like these things. Meaning, the Persian king is going to hear about this, and he's not going to be too happy about it. Let's meet about this. I'm your buddy. I'm your buddy Sambalat, and I want to help you out, make sure that nothing bad happens, because I know that these prophets have been going around announcing that you're going to be king, and when the Persian king hears about that, Artaxerxes, he's going to be none too pleased. So I wouldn't want anything bad to happen to you, so let's meet, and let me give you some advice. Let's help each other out. So all of a sudden, Sambalat has become the buddy of Nehemiah. For Eshtachoy Lov Lamar, I sent to him saying, Lo Nihyak Advarim Mo'ela, this thing never happened. Asher Atomer, that you're saying, Ki Milibcha Atovodam, you have made them up in your heart. Ki Chulam, that's what he sent to him. And now he narrates. Ki Chulam Miyarim Osanu Lamar, all of them were trying to scare us, saying, Yerpuya Dehem Mina Malacha, let their hands be weakened from the work. Velo Seyas said, should not be done. Ve'ata, and now? Chazekes Yodai? They want to strengthen my hand? Until now, they were trying to undermine me. And now, all of a sudden, he's my buddy? So, Nehemiah smelled the rat from the beginning and was unwilling to take the bait and would not meet with Sanballat.
Yay!
Okay. Now, Sanballat is a lot smarter than you think, or than it appears. There are prophets going around Yerushalayim saying that Nehemiah will be king. And Sambalat is accusing Nehemiah of having appointed those prophets, and therefore the Persian king is not going to be happy. Now, one of those prophets, his name was Shmaya ben Deloya, which we're about to read about in the next pasuk. Nehemiah now decides to investigate about these prophets who have been saying that he's going to be king. Now, it was not such a wild suggestion that Nehemiah would be king. The Jews did not know whether the monarchy would be reestablished or not. It was possible that the monarchy would be reestablished. In fact, we know that during the Second Beis Hamikdash, there was a time when the monarchy should have been reestablished. And that is after the Hanukkah story. The Hanukkah story, which happens much later than this story, it's over 100 years later, but when the Hanukkah story happens, and the Jews, that's after the Greeks have already conquered the Persians and taken over as the ruling nation over Yerushalayim, and then through the Maccabees, the Jews oust the Greeks, then the Maccabim took over as the interim leaders of the Jewish people, which was okay, but as we discussed around Hanukkah time, they should have then passed the torch to the house of David, to the line of King David, because that would be the monarchy of the Jewish people. The Hashmonaim, the Maccabees, could not be king because they were Kohanim, and a Kohen can't be king. They kept control of the government for themselves, and that ended up being the source of their own demise, of the Hashmonaim. So there was a time in the Second Beis Hamikdash when there was a Jewish monarchy that could have been reestablished, and it wasn't. But it was the time was ripe for it. Even under Persian rule, it wasn't so crazy for there to be a Jewish king, because after all, the Persians controlled many, many, many countries, all of which had their own kings. It's just that they were answerable to the Persian king, who was in control of everybody else. So it wasn't crazy that the Persian king Artaxerxes would send word that he wanted the Jews to appoint Nehemiah as king. It could have happened. So these prophets were not, the prophecies could have come true. So now Nehemiah decides he wants to find out, get to the bottom of this prophecy that's going around, that he's going to become king. So, Pasuk Yud, verse 10. Vanivasi beis Shmaya ben Deloya ben Mehetavel. I came to the house of Shmaya ben Deloya ben Mehetavel. Vahu atzur. And he was locked up, not imprisoned, but rather he was in seclusion. He was in his house, in a room where he could be alone, which would be a natural thing for a prophet to do in order to achieve prophecy, to kind of sequester himself, right, and be involved in thinking about Hashem and introspection, etc., and try to achieve a level of prophecy. And Vayomer, so Shmaya ben Deloya said to him, Nivaid el Beis HaElokim el Toch HaHechol. Let us go and meet in the Beis HaMikdash, in the sanctuary. Nehemiah was from David HaMelech, which means he was from which tribe?
Yehuda.
Yehuda, which means he could not have been a Kohen. He was not a Kohen. Here, Shemaya ben Delaya is suggesting to Nehemiah that they go into the Beis HaMikdash, into the sanctuary where they're not allowed to go. But they should go there. V'nisgirah dal sosa hecha, will close the doors of the sanctuary, and we will be safe. Ki ba'im lahargecha, because they are coming to kill you. Shemaya ben Delaya is telling him a prophecy that Sanballat and his cohorts are coming to kill him. So let us go to the Beis HaMikdash to hide. Tonight, they're coming to kill you. So let us go into the Beis HaMikdash and hide there to avoid being killed. Now, why the Beis HaMikdash? Because it was logical. Because the Beis HaMikdash was fully built. It was a fortress. And it had very powerful walls and gates. Yerushalayim, although the walls were up, but the gates were not up. And it was not protected. So it was possible for a force of men to enter Yerushalayim. Entering the Beis HaMikdash would have been a lot more complicated. So he was suggesting to Nehemiah, it's a good place to hide. Let's go there. Va'omra, I responded, Ha'ish kamoni yivrach, a man like me will run. Umi kamoni, a person like me, asher yavo al ha'ichol, v'chay, a person like me can enter the sanctuary and live. I don't belong there. I'm not a Kohen. Lo avo, I'm not going to come. Now, why did Nehemiah respond this way? Va'akira, I recognized. V'hine lo Elokim shlocho. God did not send him. Ki anavua diber alai, because the prophecy he said to me, he said it in the name of prophecy. But in fact, v'tovia v'sanvalat scharo, he was hired by Tovia and Sanvalat to be a false prophet. Leman sachur hu, in order that he be bribed, he be hired. Leman ira, so that I would fear. Ve'as the kain, I would go into the sanctuary. Ve'chatasi, that would be my sin. V'hayo lahem l'shem ra, then they would use it as an evil report. They would be able to say, Nehemiah, you think he's such a tzaddik? He went into the Beis HaMikdash. Leman yecharfuni, so that they should shame me.
So they weren't planning on killing him?
No. He's a smart man. I'm gonna tell you the whole story. Just one more pasuk. Zachra Elokai Litovia Ulisanvalat Kemasav Ela. Remember, my God, what Tovia and Sanvalat did, their actions. The Gam Lenoadya Hanivia, and also Noadya the prophetess, she did the same thing. She told false prophecies. Uliyasa Hanavim and the other prophets, Asher Hayu Miyarim Osi, that tried to scare me, tried to frighten me with their false prophecies. Sanballat hired many Jews to be false prophets to scare Nehemiah. So here's the full story. Let's first talk about what's happening here now, and then let's give the broader picture to understand that this really was a very clever and it was a clever plan, and it was also very sinister. Yeah, okay. The sinister plan. That's right.
Were they really planning to kill him?
Well, here's the story.
Alright.
Sanballat and Tovia hired prophets to go around saying that Nehemiah is going to be king in the hopes that they could use that to get to kill Nehemiah. So first thing he did is he accused Nehemiah of putting up those prophets because he wants to rebel against the king of Persia, Artaxasta, and therefore let's meet so we can decide what to do, because the king's going to send a force against Yerushalayim to wipe us out. So let's get together and figure out what to do about how to defend ourselves, how to convince the king that we really weren't trying to rebel. That didn't work. Nehemiah didn't believe him. Because Nehemiah said, until now you were my enemy, now you're my buddy? Like, what happened? So then what Sanballat did is he had the false prophet tell Nehemiah, you know, you're right. Sanballat's not your buddy. In fact, he's coming to kill you. You better go hide and run into the Beis HaMikdash.
A double agent.
Right. That's right. So Nehemiah figured out that in fact it was false, and really they were just trying to get him to go into the Beis HaMikdash, which it's not that he would have been struck down right on the spot, but it means that he would have done a terrible Avera, and they could have used that, the papers could have been all over the place. Nehemiah enters the temple where he shouldn't be. So we'll talk about that in a moment, why that's so bad, or what that conjures up in people's minds. But before that, how did Nehemiah know it was a fake? He knew it was a fake because as follows. You see, going into the Beis HaMikdash, going into the sanctuary, where a non-Kohen is not allowed to go, and even a Kohen is not allowed to go unless he's pure, okay, unless he's Tohar, going there is an Avera, it's a sin. But if one's life is in danger, they're allowed to do that. Entering even the Kodesh HaKadoshim, even the Holy of Holies, does not take the prohibition against entering, even the Kodesh HaKadosh and the Holy of Holies, does not take preference over a person's life. A person's life is in danger, they're allowed to go in there to save themselves. However, the Shemaiah ben Delaya went too far. If he would have said to Nehemiah, I was given a prophecy that your life is in danger, I think it's a good suggestion that we enter the sanctuary to protect you, then he might have thought about it. But what Shemaiah ben Delaya said was, God told me that you should enter the sanctuary to protect yourself. So Nehemiah reasoned as follows. It's true, I can go into the sanctuary to save my life if my life truly is in danger. But why would Hashem make that suggestion? Hashem has many ways, has thousands of ways, has an infinite amount of ways to save my life. If He wants me to be safe, He could save me so many ways. Why would He, with a capital H, pick a way that is against what the Torah says? That doesn't make sense. Therefore, he reasoned, this can't possibly be true. Therefore, he reasoned that Shemaiah ben Delaya is a false prophet, which he was, and if he's lying about how to save myself, he's also lying about the prophecy to that my life is in danger. Because why would he lie to get me to go into the sanctuary? It must be he wants me into the sanctuary so that they can say I did a sin, which means my life really is not in danger. They're not strong enough to attack and to murder me. They're just trying to get me to do something wrong so they could plaster the papers with it. And that's when Nehemiah didn't believe them. Now, let me tell you two incidents that this story is really building upon, that in the Jewish consciousness at that time, anybody would have thought of this and would have possibly gotten Nehemiah to do the wrong thing. First of all, Nehemiah must have thought about Gedaliah ben Achikam. Mm-hmm. Gedaliah was murdered, as we fast on some Gedaliah after Rosh Hashanah. Gedaliah was murdered after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. He was the last. There was the last remnant of Jews in Israel, and Gedaliah was appointed as the governor over them. Yishmael ben Nesanya was a descendant from Yehuda, who was jealous of the appointment of Gedaliah and wanted the governorship for himself, and he plotted to kill Gedaliah, and he did. He met with Gedaliah and he was alone with him and he killed him. But the shame of it all is that Gedaliah was warned. He was warned that Yishmael was coming to kill him. And Gedaliah did not accept the report, because Gedaliah said it's Lashon Hara. And one is not allowed to, one is not allowed to listen to Lashon Hara, but if one hears Lashon Hara, one is not allowed to believe it. And this is really something that people don't realize. If someone tells you that so-and-so did something wrong, someone tells you, you know what so-and-so did? And you say, don't tell me it's Lashon Hara, I don't want to hear it. So, yeah, but I got to tell you, you know what they did? And they forced it upon you. So, you know what they did? They stabbed her in the back, blah, 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 and they did the whole thing. Like, they tell you a whole story. You're not allowed to believe it. It's very hard to do. But in your mind, you have to either figure out a way to be melamed tzchus, to judge favorably, or to figure out why the person speaking is mistaken, or if you have no way of figuring it out, you're forced to say, the person speaking to me is a liar. You should sooner believe that the speaker is a liar than believe what the person is saying, because you're not allowed to believe Lashon Hara. It's an interesting thing. When in training children, and we all need training in Lashon Hara, but in training children, so if one child comes and says that that one of their siblings is doing something wrong, unless it's something which is destructive, either towards a person or towards property. But if it's not something like that, let's say a child comes and says that so-and-so took a lollipop. They weren't supposed to. They took a cookie. They weren't supposed to. So as a response, what we try to do is to respond and say, is that Lashon Hara? Of course, the child will say, and then we'll say, well, because it's Lashon Hara, we can't believe you. And then we will not go and stop the other child, even though, of course, we know the child is doing it, right? But we have to teach the children, you're not allowed to believe it. And if I believe you, if I go to the kitchen to go stop the other child, that means I'm believing what you're telling me. So, but I'm not allowed to believe it. So to get that message home, I can't believe it. So I mean, it's a very difficult thing to not believe Lashon Hara. So Gedalia said, I'll get to your question in a moment, Gedalia said, I can't believe it. And therefore, he did not protect himself, and he was murdered. And that resulted in many people being killed and the entire remnant of the Jewish people being forced out of Israel.
Well, does that mean that he was...
So let me just finish before you... Right. So Gedalia was wrong. The Chazal tell us that Gedalia was wrong. And the reason why he was wrong is because since the report was a report of danger to him, therefore, as the Gemara says, Lemechash Mibai. Even though you're not allowed to believe it 100%, but you're allowed to suspect that it may be true. And therefore, to take protective steps is appropriate. What's the difference between believing it and taking protective steps? Taking protective steps means that Gedalia will be careful not to be alone with Yishmael, to make sure that he will have his guards with him when he's dining with Yishmael. That's taking protective steps. Believing it is to make up in one's mind that person, Yishmael ben Asaya, he's an evil person, he's a murderer, he's out to kill me, so he's a murderer. That's believing it. To go that far is wrong because he didn't do anything. So you can't just believe it straight out. But to take protective measures is appropriate. And that's true with any kind of Lashon Hara. Someone tells you that so-and-so is you don't want to associate with so-and-so because they're a bad influence. They're a bad influence on your family, they're a bad influence on you, they don't speak nicely, whatever it is, they're not a kind of person that you want to be around. So if I believe it 100%, then I will just, I will, you know, my mind, this person is evil, and this person is terrible, I'm not going to be like it. If I'm going to, lemechash mibay, I'm going to take protective measures, I'm not going to decide in my mind this person is evil, but I'm going to say to myself, okay, I need to at least be careful. I have to, when I do meet this person, I do need to be on my guard to make sure that the influence is not going to be a negative influence. I have to watch out for it. That's the difference between believing 100% or taking protective measures. So Gedalia didn't believe it at all. Wasn't willing even to take protective measures. So that resulted in his death. Here, Nehemiah is in a very similar position. He's being told that someone's out to kill you. And according to the rules of Lashon Hara, perhaps he can't believe it 100%, although with Sanballat he might even be able to believe it 100% because Sanballat was a Rasha. He was an evil person. So he might have been able to believe it, but certainly to take protective measures, and Shmaya ben Delaya is telling him is take protective measures. Go hide in the Beis HaMikdash. So it would be very hard to totally ignore it. So let me get to your questions. So, 1 and 2. Go ahead.
Are Sanballat and Tobiah Jewish? I think I missed a class in that.
They are not. There's a discussion about Tovia, whether he is or isn't, but Sanballat is not.
So do we apply the laws of Lashon Hara in the same way?
Not in the same way. But over here...
Oh, but it was a Jew who was telling him, sorry.
Right. No, but even... So, he certainly... If he wouldn't take the laws of Lashon Hara into account over here, then all the more so he should take protective measures. The point we're making is that even if it was a Jew he was talking about, you're still allowed and should take protective measures. So here, all the more so.
But you also made the point that it was very important that being the tzaddik that he was at the time, that he knew that Hashem would never command one
How he knew that it was a lie. Right. But what I'm pointing out, though, is that it was natural for Nehemiah to be thinking that, well, you know, I got to take protective measures, so maybe I should go into the Beis HaMikdash. But that's only one of the two things that be playing on his mind. Now, there's another thing that would be playing on Nehemiah's mind, at least that these are the two things that I'm aware of. There could have been a lot more. But the other thing is a different story that happened many years before the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, which again, Nehemiah would have been very familiar with, because it was with one of his ancestors. And that is with the king Yehoash.
Mm-hmm.
The king Yehoash was in a very tragic time for Malchus Beis David, for the Davidic line. The king Yehoash was a year old when there was a rebellion within the royal family, and one of the members of the family, it was a female, had all of the Davidic line murdered. She was successful, and she crowned herself as queen over the Jewish people, killing out everybody else. The only one to survive was Yehoash at 1 year old. At 1 year old, his wet nurse took him to hide him, and they were hidden by the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol at the time was Yehoyada, Kohen Gadol, and Yehoyada hid them. And he hid them in the one place where no one would think to ask, because to look for them. Because once she had full control over the government, she had at her disposal the army, she had at her disposal all of the government people, and she could search high and low for this baby. So where are you going to hide this one-year-old and his wet nurse where no one will find them? So Yehoyada, Kohen Gadol, hid them in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Holy of Holies. That's where he hid them. There's a difference of opinion whether they were actually in the room of the Holy of Holies itself or right above it. Either way, it was a place where no one could go on the second floor above it. Either way, no one was allowed in there except for the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. And they were hidden in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Holy of Holies. Now think about that. That means you're talking about an adult, a woman, and a baby. You're talking about all the functions of life, of eating and everything else that goes along with life, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. How is that permitted? Well, it's permitted to save somebody's life. And that's what happened. And they were in there for 6 years. Mm-hmm. For 6 years, they hid in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies. Can you imagine the Kohen Gadol, Yehoyada Kohen Gadol, can only go in there on Yom Kippur. And when he would come in there on Yom Kippur, he would find in there, he knows they're in there, this woman and this baby who becomes a toddler, who becomes a little bit older, and they're in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, hiding for their lives. What kind of a bunker is that to hide in? And that's where they are. For 6 years, that's where they're hiding. When Yehoash turns 7 years old, that's when Yehoyada Kohen Gadol feels that the time is ripe to reestablish the real king, and he leads a rebellion against this woman. I believe her name was Asalia. I don't want to mistake, because I'm afraid I'm going to make a mistake, and it's being recorded forever and ever and ever and ever. So anyway, so he leads a rebellion. They have her killed, and he establishes Yehoash as king. And the verse itself says, Ben Shema Shanim Yehoash B'malko. Yehoash was 7 years old when he became king. But of course, he took his marching orders from the Kohen Gadol, from Yehoyada Kohen Gadol. It should be noted that Yehoyada Kohen Gadol was not just the Kohen Gadol. Yehoyada Kohen Gadol was one of those rare people who wore two crowns. He wore the crown of Kahuna, is it correct? Who wore the crown?
No, it's somewhere around.
Is somewhere around there? Gotcha. He wore the crown of, yeah, it's Asalia. Yeah. Yeah, that's who it is. Thank you. Okay. So,
yes.
so he, wore, He wore the crown of Kohuna. He was the high priest. He was the Kohen Gadol. He also wore the crown of Torah. He was the greatest sage of his time. Sometimes you find that. Like, for instance, David HaMelech, King David, was both the king, and he also was the leader of Torah. He was the greatest sage of his time. Here, Yehoyada also was the Kohen Gadol and the greatest Torah scholar of his time. And the Rambam, when he lists the tradition of Torah, going from Moshe Rabbeinu all the way down, and who was the leader of of Torah in each generation, so the line passes through Yehoyada. He's one of those people. So, yeah.
This is before or after the Maccabees?
Well before. This is during the first temple, during the first Beis Hamikdash.
Oh.
This is during.
They weren't the first to do that.
No, Yehoyada wasn't the king.
Oh.
He was the Kohen Gadol, and he was the head of Torah.
Oh.
He was the greatest sage of his time. He made sure Yehoash was the king, and he was of the Davidic line. Now, when Yehoash became king, so his Rebbe was Yehoyada Kohen Gadol. He listened to everything Yehoyada told him. So Yehoash was a righteous king, and in fact, the Haftarah that we read for Parshas Shkalim, which we only read a few weeks ago, is from Yehoash, because he established the funds to repair the Beis HaMikdash, the annual funds. So that Yehoash was a righteous king. However, after Yehoyada dies, at the end of Yehoyada's life, Yehoash then goes astray. What happens? What happens is that people come to Yehoash and they start to worship him as a deity. Because they say, anybody who walks into the Kodesh HaKadosh, into the Holy of Holies, and is not supposed to be there, they pay for it with their lives. God doesn't tolerate that. And you lived there for 6 years. You must be divine. And they began to worship him. And in fact, Zechariah, the son of Yehoyada, the Kohen Gadol, Zechariah tried to stop this. And he was killed in the Beis HaMikdash. And his blood boiled for over 100 years. And that's the story of the boiling blood that you might remember that we read about on Tisha B'Av, where the Nebuzradan, the butcher, he came to Yerushalayim as the right-hand man of Nebuchadnezzar, and he found the boiling blood, and he asked them, "What is this?" And they said, "It's from an animal that was slaughtered." And then he slaughtered animals to test it to see if the blood looked the same, and it didn't. And finally, he tortured them, and they admitted what had happened, that they had killed a Kohen and a Navi. Kohen and a Navi. Zechariah was both a Kohen and a Navi, and a prophet. They killed him in the Beis HaMikdash. And then he said, "Okay, then I will atone for his blood." And he started murdering Jew after Jew after Jew after Jew to atone for the blood of Zechariah. He murdered thousands and thousands of Jews. He married pious Jews. He married elderly Jews. He married children. He murdered children, women, everybody. He just murdered, killed Jews. And in the end, the way the Gemara reports it is, the blood was just flowing through the Beis HaMikdash. He was just murdering so many people. And finally, he called out to God, and he said, or I can't remember if he called out to God or he called out to Zechariah, and he said, "Do you want me to murder the entire Jewish people to atone for the blood?" And then the blood stopped boiling. We read about this on Tisha B'Av. This was a result of their worshipping Yehoash. And that was a result of his having lived in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And after Yehoyada died, this is what happened. In the end, Yehoash himself was murdered, and that was the end of Yehoash. He was a righteous king, but this at the end was unfortunately the way his monarchy ended. Yes?
Number one, why was the woman killed? And number two, would that have been enough reason for the temple to eventually be destroyed?
Why was which woman killed?
Asaliah.
Asaliah was the one who murdered everybody else. She was the one who murdered the Davidic line.
No, I'm talking about the woman who was second killed.
She was not killed. No,
she was not.
I'm sorry, I said it right. I was a little unclear.
But so that happening, the boiling of the blood and all of the murders in the Beit HaMikdash. wouldn't that be?
Yes, that was a terrible.
To destroy.
That was a terrible sin.
To destroy the temple.
That was a terrible, terrible sin. In fact, the Gemara says that Aaron, Moshe's brother Aaron, when Moshe was up on the mountain and the Jews wanted to worship the golden calf, they wanted to do something. So Aaron is the one who took the gold and threw it in the fire and produced the golden calf. So the Gemara says that he thought about trying to stop them. But Hur, Aaron's nephew, already tried to stop them and he was murdered. So the Gemara says, Aaron said to himself, if I try to stop them and they kill me, I'm not just like Hur. Hur was a righteous person, but I am both the Kohen and the Navi combined. If they kill me, then they'll never get an atonement. That'll be a terrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gemara says, as we find later in history, when they murdered Zechariah, the son of Yo-Yada, look what happened. Aaron said to himself, I don't want the Jews to have that on their heads. Better that I should help them put together some sort of something to worship, but I'll go slow, I'll delay, and I'll try to wait for Moshe to come down. And the whole, better we should do that. And at worst, they'll worship idolatry. But idolatry, if they worship idolatry, it won't be something that will totally wipe them out. They'll still survive. But if they kill me, a prophet and a Kohen, who knows if they'll ever get atonement. So this was a terrible, terrible sin that they killed Zechariah. It's not something that people can do in a vacuum. We do not agree with those who say that the German people were just innocent citizens and this ranting maniac took over.
Sure.
He took over in a country that was ripe for him to take over.
Right.
And they bear as much responsibility as anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right?
So when things like that happen, the broader group is responsible, unfortunately. Now, when the suggestion is made for Nehemiah to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, he for sure thought of this other incident, because there is a precedent. Someone else saved his life. I mean, he was 1 year old. But Yehoyada Kohen Gadol, someone no less than the Gadol Hadar, the greatest sage of the generation, and the Kohen Gadol, sanctioned taking this baby into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, to the Holy of Holies, and living there for 6 years. So this is not like a wild idea. It's happened. And it makes sense. So Nehemiah certainly would have thought to himself, well, maybe I should. So you have these two incidents that happened before, that someone's life was saved by going in there, and someone was killed but for not listening to such a warning.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I should do it. Let's couple this with what we learned last week, which is that Nehemiah, who was a very righteous, incredibly great person, but there was one slight, subtle problem in that he took credit for himself. That was that one thing we said last week. Remember, we have to stress again that he was far more humble than anybody we've ever met, including ourselves, but he's a very, very humble person. But there was some small element over there where he took credit for himself. And for that, the book wasn't named for him. Someone who believes that there is somebody is much more likely to take this idea of entering the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Because let's think about it. A king, what is the real challenge for a king? A king who has, remember, our monarchs have sweeping powers. We don't believe in any kind of balance of power. The king is the king, and the king can do whatever he wants. So what's the real challenge for a king? The real challenge for a king is to remember that he's not really the king. There's a king of kings upstairs. And that he, the king, is just as much a subject to Hashem as anybody else is. And he is also responsible and subject to the laws of the Torah. And he's not above the laws of the Torah. And whatever the Torah says, he has to do. So just because he's the king, he's limited on how many wives he can have, he's limited on how much money he can have, he's limited on different things. One of the limitations that a king has is that he cannot go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. the Kohen Gadol can. So he has someone who is officially beneath him in the hierarchy of the government, the Kohen Gadol, but the Kohen Gadol can go into that room, and I can't. The king can't go into that room. That's a limitation. And not only can, it's not just any room, it's the holiest room in the world. It's made of gold. The ark is in there. This is a major place. Can't go in there. It would be very tempting for a king, especially if that king has a certain sense of I don't even want to use the word ego, because that would be so out of place. It's not true, because we think of a person who's like, who's got a, you know, you wouldn't be able to see in Nehemiah any of this. But what I mean to say is that Chazal have identified in Nehemiah a very subtle issue over there. And he would be drawn to want to have the opportunity to enter the Kodesh HaKadosh, the Holy of Holies. And here, his life is at stake, and we have a precedent. But Nehemiah doesn't take the bait. Nehemiah has his wits about him, and he's enough of a God-fearing person. He had tremendous fear of God, and was pious enough, learned his lesson of not taking credit for himself, and was able to think clearly and see through it. This was a test that God was throwing in Nehemiah's way to see if he would overcome his natural tendency to want to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Nehemiah passed this test with flying colors. He saw right through it, was unwilling to allow his own interest, his own desire to enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim to cloud his vision. And he was able to identify the problem and reject it out of hand. And that's what he does. And that does protect him. Which to me is why Pasuk Yadal, verse 14, when he says, "Remember my God, Tovia and Sanballat, Zachra Elokai, Tovia and Sanballat," is the same language as the last verse in Perek Hayin, chapter 5. The verse where he took credit for himself is Zachra li Elokai Latova. Remember me, God, for good. That's where he is accused of taking credit for himself. The same language is used here. Zachra Elokai. Remember my God, Latovia Latovalat. Here, it is an atonement for his having taken credit. He is now not thinking highly of himself. He doesn't think he deserves to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He's able to see through the whole thing and remain true to God. The Pasuk continues in verse 15, Pasuk Tes Vav. I want to make sure we finish the chapter. Vatishlam Hachoma, the wall was completed Be'esrim Vachamish of Elul on the 25th day of Elul. Vachamishim Ushnaim Yom, it took 52 days from the beginning of the construction of the wall until it was completed, including the doors, was 52 days. If you date back 52 days from the 25th of Elul, so you have 25 days in Elul, so 52 minus 25 is 27, so you go back 27 days in the month of Av, and you end up on the third day of Av. You'll recall that he got to Yerushalayim, he left for Yerushalayim on in Nisan, he got there, and then he waited 3 days, and then he began the construction. If we're dating it properly, it means he got to Yerushalayim on Rosh Chodesh Av, on the first day of Av, and then waited 3 days, till the third day or fourth day of Av, and started work then. That's when he went around at night, broke the wall, and then the work started. And this would be 52 days later. If that's true, then it comes out an amazing thing that he would have arrived in Yerushalayim on the same date that Ezra did when Ezra traveled. If you recall, Ezra left on Rosh Chodesh Nisan and got to Yerushalayim on Rosh Chodesh Av that we learned about before. So he would have had the same travel itinerary as he was on the same plane as Ezra. Different year, but it would have been the same plane. Tezayin 16. Vayhi kasher shamu kol oyveinu, and it was when all of our enemies heard, vayiru kol hagoyim asher sviyoseinu, and all of the nations that were around us were in fear, vayipum ba'od be'einehem, and they were low in their own eyes, Vayedu, and they knew, Kime Eis Elokeinu Nesasa HaMalacha Hazos, that it was from God that this work was done. So this now effectively stopped all of the opposition around Yerushalayim. Gam Bayamim Ha'em, also in those days, Marbim Chore Yehuda Igrosehem, there were many of the leaders of Yehuda who were sending letters, Hochos Al Tovia, going to Tovia. And from Tovia to them. There was a lot of correspondence. Tovia was considered to be a very prominent person, although he was an evil person, he was a prominent person. And there were many letters that would go between the leaders of the Jewish people and Tovia and back and forth. Ki rabim b'Yehuda bali shvua lo, because there were many Jews who were, bali shvua means, literally means those who took oaths to him, but it means those who had covenants with him. Ki chasan hu lishchanya ben Arach, because he was a son-in-law to a prominent person named Shechanya ben Arach. V'Yehochanan beno, and his son Yehochanan, lakach es bas Meshulam ben Berechya. He took, as a wife, the daughter of Meshulam ben Berechya, who was also a very prominent person. The problem is, Tovia was a slave. He was an Eved, as we learned before. And this is one of those incidents where people were not careful about who they married. They married someone, they were technically Jewish, but they were slaves. And a regular Jew is not allowed to marry a slave. Slaves are not allowed to marry a regular Jew. So this was a problem that his children and he himself were married to people they should not have been married to, and there was a correspondence between him and other prominent people of the Jewish people. Gam tovo sav hayu omrim lifanai. Also, there were good things people said about him to me, meaning people tried to justify his actions to me, they tried to speak highly of him to me. Udvarai hayu motziim lo, and my words were found to him. My responses of my negative responses were found to him. Igros shalach Tovia liareini, and Tovia would send letters that tried to scare me, but I would not listen. They would not penetrate. That is the end of story of the enemies of the Jewish people attempting to stop the building. We now move on to other aspects of Nehemiah's leadership in Yerushalayim.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the Donate link. Thank you very much.